Hello,
Hello,
Roger.
Alison.
Welcome.
Thank you.
This is about getting to know you. We've got a few more minutes to do that. So, what was the one thing that drew you to your medical practice? And specifically, palliative care. What drew you there?
I think most palliative care practitioners have got some kind of experience of loss in the background to their decision to do palliative care. It may not be an evoked decision, but it's more like a subconscious thing where you want to make you want to make sense of your own life and your world by investing care and compassion in the supportive care of others. And I think it was that ability, that thing, to be able to actually enrich my own life by being loving in the care of others and having more empathy to listen and understand people's feelings before acting and reacting to their problems. I think sometimes in medicine it's a little bit scientific and disengaged, but I needed something that was more engaged for me personally to value my own life and value what I was doing. And so palliative care became a great place to hide.
Hide, interesting term.
Hide from the harsh realities of life.
Oh, okay. Question then. Have you always been empathetic, or is it something you've developed? And if so, how do you develop that
empathy? I always wanted to be the person in a crisis to go and talk to the families even when I was younger. But I don't think that empathy was a strong personal, natural kind of quality that I had. It was something I developed more as I went along, and I think I developed it more once I came into a deeper connection with myself and my own inner sort of grieving, loss, separation situations that happened in my own life. A little bit of unfinished business that goes on within all of us as human beings. Once I started to engage that and sort of work through it, I found myself in a place where I was more connected to the suffering and loss that others were going through, and more qualified to be able to respond to that effectively and do something medically to support people. So it became the tools of medicine became very useful to me then. It was a good expression of myself.
Wow. Okay. Well, people are joining us now, and will be for the next 5 minutes or so. I think people will be coming online. But
are they tuning into this?
They are. Yes, they are. They are. Oh. They're already part.
Hello, everybody.
So, for those of you who are just joining us, Roger Cole is zooming in from Australia, and Dr. Roger Cole is a palliative care doctor. And he's going to be sharing from his years of experience about coping with grief and loss. We know that there isn't one way of grieving or dealing with loss. And there's no right or wrong, I'm guessing, in the process. It's just a process. But how is it that we can bring out the best for ourselves during that journey or that period of our life? And so I'm going to hand over to Roger, and Roger will be taking questions towards the end of the talk. Thank you.
Okay, everybody. It's really a pleasure to tune in to you there in London. Good morning there. It's good evening here in Australia where I'm sitting. So my name is Roger Cole. I've been a palliative care specialist for the last 30 years. Before that, I was a human being. I'm still a human being. And I was just talking to Artie shortly, a little while before, and one of the things that probably underlies a subconscious desire for people to work in palliative care is that they often have unfinished losses or grief that they've passed through in their own experience of life, and then have the opportunity to manifest empathy and compassion for others going through such terrible situations in life, with the background of experience and with the understanding of the roles that we play, myself as a doctor, others as nurses, as psychologists, social workers, and allied health professionals and volunteers who make up the hospice movement. I guess we're here to talk about grief and loss today, and I feel that separation and loss is probably the worst of, we're probably talking about the worst and most complex human experience that exists in the world today. And so to make sense of that is challenging, to say the least, in all honesty. I'll do my best today with you to give some context to it at least. But it is a raging emotional experience that defies, defies order and organization. It's a chaotic experience, personally. The things that I'll try to do is I'll try to put it into some sort of context from some backgrounds of things that I found useful to use as tools for my learning and understanding of grief and loss. But I have to say, it's everybody's experience is individual. It's hard to actually, sometimes we say things like, you know, I know what you're going through because I've been through it. But actually, the truth is, you've been through it and you know what you went through, but you don't know what anyone else is going through in reality. But you are connected to something that is extraordinarily traumatic and difficult for people in that moment. And I guess it's really publicized at the moment with the COVID-19 experience worldwide. So we're all connected through a common experience of being locked down, separated from our normal lives. And that can involve a certain amount of grief and loss and opportunity, actually, all three. But also people going through this COVID-19, there's been a lot of additional deaths taking place that are very widely publicized and under very extraordinarily difficult circumstances, where people are isolated from families and there's limited numbers allowed to funerals and places, and those sort of things that are to do with the healing process. I do like to have this idea that we are, as human beings, we are whole at some level. And we are complete and pure at some level, where healing is a natural process, and that it is natural to heal. Ultimately, it's normal to go through intense experiences when there's been a separation of some sort. But it's also natural to heal eventually through that. But how does that healing take place? And this is something I hope I'll be able to touch on a little bit with you today. So where does grief come from in the first instance? It comes from a love, an experience of love and attachment. And I suppose I talked about this to a considerable extent in relationship to loss of another person who's very significant in my life. Whereas there are sort of grieving for things that I've loved. I've loved my job, attached to my job, and I have to retire. That can, there are different things we can grieve for in life: loss of possessions and wealth, things like people walking into your house and stealing things from your house. That's violation of your violation, but there's also grief and loss associated with that. Anything that we invest emotionally, a feeling of love and attachment to, that gets broken. So separation, loss, and grief are the kind of separation and loss are the prelude to grief. So what must happen is I must have attachment to be able to set up a situation where grief can happen. If we go back to my very younger years, when I was very innocent and pure, that once upon a time we were all like this. Nothing had touched us in life, and we had no foundation of experience to understand what loss can bring. And we naturally had people who loved us more than others around us. And we also had things that we loved a great deal, and we became attached to, possessions. I remember my daughter carried a bunny rabbit around for about 15 years. It was a terrible mess by the time she finally let it go of it. But but she carried that through her part, a substantial part of her life. And there was this deep kind of feeling of attachment to, it was very sweet and lovely, really, but there's a deep attachment to things. I can remember, for instance, when I was a child, when I was about 10 years old, I was given a set of pens. I love those pens, you know. They were sort of like, you know, like sometimes you get something, you just keep looking at it. I love that thing, you know. It's like the fast cars and things, but I love these pens. And I took these pens to school on my first day at school, in a new school, and they got stolen that day, and I was devastated. And I know that I don't think I've ever invested as much emotional energy in an object or a possession since, because it caused me so much pain. But that set there, there's that sort of attachment to something sets up the opportunity for loss and separation from that thing, and a grief reaction, a distress reaction. And once you've had a distress reaction of one type, you develop a kind of complex protective personality where you develop defenses around having that experience again. So you try not to experience such devastation within yourself again for anything, whether it's you've lost pets or anything you invested through love, first love, then attachment, then separation, then loss, and loss come together. The love of relationships is very pure, and I've always had this difficulty that the more the love, the greater the grief you'll experience if you lose someone that you love, that's very close, that you're very close to. So I had a friend who's a minister, a Christian minister, who said, honor your grief, because it's a reflection of how deep the love was for the person that you've lost. But I struggled with that a little bit because I feel that love is such a pure energy that it can't, there's nothing in the nature of love that can lead to suffering or distress that grief brings. And I started to realize that when we're in love with someone, we fall in love, or we've got a love relationship with our children or whoever, our grandchildren or whoever's brought into our lives. What happens within that love relationship is it becomes a special relationship in which I develop a deep, strong attachment. And I started to recognize that the deeper the attachment in the relationship, the deep attachment is the source of separation and loss and grief reaction. The love that is pure and connecting is never affected in that relationship. We don't lose the love that we had for that person when there's a loss taking place. We lose the attachment, and it's the separation that gives the profound and deep feeling of such extraordinary distress within ourselves. I remember as I went through my sort of training years in palliative medicine, the people who influenced my life included Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And you've probably heard of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, or you may not have done actually, but people used to have heard of her when I was young, which is a while ago now. But she came up with five stages of dying, really, which is actually five stages of anticipatory grief in the dying process. And the first was shock and denial, kind of disbelief that this could be happening to me. And I know that people who have been told the diagnosis of a life-threatening illness commonly have this feeling like it's not real. Even later on, as they go through the process and they're facing the end of their life towards the end of a disease, there's still this feeling like it's not real. And they'll often say, well, it feels a bit surreal. It's not real. It feels surreal. As if I'm watching a story that I'm not only part of. And I think when we hear the news that someone has died, this feeling of unreality is there, or surreal feeling. It's hard to believe it. It's a kind of a disbelief. And then she the other stages that she went into were was this anger, you know, that's part of this is like, why me? How could this happen? or anger about what happened, the circumstances, what were the circumstances going through, what actually happened over and over and over again. And if there's a perpetrator involved with the death or someone's to blame, then all this blame sort of process takes place. And it's such a harsh reality for my feelings and emotions. It's such a mental distress. And I can remember seeing a story about a couple whose daughter was murdered and in a very unpleasant situation. And the wife finally said, you know, I had to forgive because the alternative to forgiving was an unbelievable feeling of loss. The circumstances can create a very complex grief. And most of the grieving I'm going to talk about today is going to be more the natural grieving process or the healthy grieving process rather than the complex grief and loss where things don't resolve and I don't heal internally. But you will heal internally eventually. This is the reality, because internally there's something deep within myself that is very, very pure and has a quality of my original nature and personality, which was totally whole and beyond all the influence of anything that can happen to me this life. I strongly believe that, and that means that everybody has within them a seed of healing that will ultimately find its way back into your heart, which has been broken. She went on to say the next stage that she said stages, but this is just like a tumultuous mess of emotions in reality. But the next stage that she said was, so we had shock and denial, anger. Then there was a kind of stage of bargaining, which isn't really part of the grieving process, I don't think. It's more to do with how we wanting more time when I'm in the middle of a dying process. And then depression, like the reality sets in, the loss is there, the feelings sit more deeply with me, and the emotions that would sort of once contain so much anger sort of gives way into a kind of helpless despair, hopeless feeling. There's no meaning, there's no value to this, and a sense of meaninglessness, an existential crisis that becomes a feeling of deep sadness and loss and depression. And ultimately, the final stage that she came to was that we find peace and we find acceptance somewhere. And as we find acceptance, we let go of the negative emotions, and the state of acceptance brings peace to the mind of the individual until I feel kind of more comfortable with my world around me and less affected by the loss that's taken place. It doesn't mean to say I'm losing the value of that relationship. It just means that the memory doesn't hurt me or cause me as much pain as it used to cause. And it also means I can start to invest in my world and my life. And perhaps that word we don't always like, the word moving on. But I can move on, I can let go and become more free again to reinvest in a relationship and live again. A lot of guilt comes up when we start to think about living again and not having that person in that life anymore, because we might feel like we're dishonoring the memory of that person by being happy again. It's just like we're crazy mixed up people, aren't we? Like being happy again can be dishonoring the memory of that person. And I feel a wave of guilt when I do that. And this happens. The grief will come sometimes in a wave-like form when you're not expecting it. Early in the grieving process, when you've been through loss and the person's not there anymore, you can have a really dark experience of waves of black feeling, which is, I sometimes thought it's like a dark fist that just holds the heart tightly and won't let go of it, and then eventually it just releases gradually and allows you to become comfortable again. But then that wave can repeat itself over and over and over again, and it can come on at times when it's least expected, just in the middle of doing nothing, you just suddenly find yourself in this sort of wave-like experience of this deep gauntlet of a kind of black fist around the heart. The most distressing of human experiences. I'm so sorry to be putting this out over the internet in such depth, but it's such a dark feeling. And you know, like sometimes the world unites in its grief. I know there's been a little bit of that in COVID-19, but I remember, you may remember, or if you're old enough like me, you may remember when Diana Lady died, when Princess Di died. All around the world, there was this shock, and the world became united in the loss. This person's had such an influence on so many hearts around the world that their hearts broke together, and people were united in grief. I feel in my heart that there's a much more beautiful form of being united, and that's being united in love. And I think one of the things that we really need to start to understand about grief and loss is that it has a capacity to bring us together, but it needs to bring us together back through the avenues of empathy and caring, love and compassion, where we're united in bringing peace to one another and to the minds of those that are going through distress. There was another writer called William Worden who influenced my understanding of grief and loss through the years, and he wrote about four tasks of grieving. And I suppose it's quite strange to put things in the ideology of tasks, but the first task was probably a bit similar to Kubler-Ross in a way. The first task is to come to terms with the reality of the loss, that it's a reality, the loss has happened, where you can actually start to put the person in the past tense to some extent and to understand that they're not there anymore. But again, it feels unreal. There's that feeling of unreal reality and disbelief. The sense that person is just going to walk back into the room and their personality that I used to love is going to actually be light up the room again and be there again. The fact that they're not there just keeps coming back and back, and the waves of that dark sense of loss and feeling of grieving can be upon me. But it takes some time for it to become a really true experience, a reality. They really have gone, and that's a really hard, harsh sort of moment of acceptance for us to get through. That's the second task that William Worden wrote about was to go through the pain of the experience of grieving. So the pain of the experience is all the emotions and distress that takes place. It doesn't seem to have any structure or organization. It seems chaotic, but you can tease out little parts, different small little parts of it. Such as there can be a lot of anger sometimes, and fear is kind of one of the sort of unusual things I didn't used to realize was part of the grieving, but the fear of living without that person, because that person's created part of my identity, and the loss of that person means I'm going through a sense of identity crisis. I've lost myself. I've lost a part of myself. I can't live without that person. And the anger that comes out of that, which is partly from loss of my feeling of my own wholeness, the anger that comes out of that will start to be directed and nestle on anything I can pick. And the things that I can pick might be a delayed diagnosis made by a doctor, for instance, or a perpetrator of a crime in which the other person died or was killed. An accident that took place where someone was irresponsible, a whole lot of things and the anger is actually sometimes, and for me personally, I think anger was one of the great things I used to do whenever I got vulnerable, I could get angry because it actually stopped me becoming vulnerable to a deeper feeling of loss or sadness. And I could avoid sadness by being angry. And sometimes people will keep the anger structured so intensely that they never actually, they put aside the healthy process of coming to the reality of the loss and starting to cry and to give, let the sadness take over and to go through the sadness, because you can't avoid, the more you try to avoid the reality that the sadness needs to be worked through, the more denial there is of that sadness, the less healthy your grieving will be, and the amount of healing that you'll experience will be influenced by that. So the deep sadness is that dark kind of wave-like feeling I described before that can overcome us when we go through a grieving experience, through a separation and loss experience. The other raw emotions that can come up include things like not just feeling of sadness and loss, not just feeling of anger, but other distressing experiences. You know, just that wishing that person was there, that pining and desire for that, need for that relationship to still be existing, the absolute massive distress that we go through is unimaginable depth of darkness sometimes. And this there's no way around this. I remember a young man who came to see me once. His 3-year-old daughter had been killed in a terrible accident where a goalpost fell on her in a football game. And he just said, I had no way around it. I had no way over it. There was no way under it. I realized in the end I had to just go through it. And when we're in the midst of the pain of grief, we look for ways out of it, and we look for answers, and we might go to different people or to different things or to spiritual gatherings or whatever it is to try to find an answer. But nothing gives meaning to it actually. And the realization becomes eventually that I have to go through it. To go through it is the way actually. It's not, there's no way out of it. You have to just actually go through the whole process. There is another side eventually, but going through it is the only way. And it means you can't avoid the distressing feelings and emotions that you feel are about to consume you completely. It feels like you're going to die sometimes with the intensity when grief is at its most intense. But you won't, and you will pass through it ultimately, and eventually there is a place of healing for everyone. But you can't avoid that. So that second task of breathing is to go through the pain of the loss of the separation that's taken place in the William Warden's four tasks of grieving. And the third is to adjust to a world in which that person no longer exists. And this is tricky, because as you start to reinvest your life and to start to move on a little, there's no timing for any of this. There's the duration of grief can be anything from months to years, and its intensity relates to how much attachment there is to the person or the thing that you've lost. There's no right or wrong way. There's nothing right or wrong about what people do. Whatever you're going through, if you are in the midst of grief, is probably absolutely, is 99% of the time absolutely normal. So it might be absolutely normal to keep a room exactly like it was when that person was alive. And it might be normal to actually clear that room on the 2 days after that person has died. But it depends on the individual as to what's normal. It's not, there's no actual written kind of prescription for what you should or shouldn't do in these circumstances. The third task of grieving is your adjustment to a world in which that person isn't there anymore. And one of the things that's hard about this phase is the guilt. It feels like I'm not honoring that person when I'm being if I find myself laughing or enjoying myself, suddenly the memory comes, clicks back in, and I feel guilty that I'm actually enjoying myself or I had a laugh about something. I'm starting to live again when that person isn't there anymore. It becomes very, it's a very harsh and difficult sort of period of getting through this phase of adjusting to that world when that person isn't there anymore, especially when there's things they used to do that made part of that. And it can be harder when there's practical things like, you know, if you've lost the person in the house who used to do all the practical things, keep up the accounts and put out the rubbish and, you know what I mean, all these different tasks, cook the dinners, whatever it was they did, and they're suddenly not there anymore. It's really hard to adjust to that reality. They're not carrying out those normal things. And this, and the whole feelings of, you know, like the original tasks of the reality and the unreality and working through the pain all comes back again. It doesn't all go off in this sort of like nice little sort of stages of grieving or things like that. It's actually all a big mess that we're trying to undo. And the final or fourth task of grieving is actually to be able to live again with that person still in your memories, but the memories are no longer as hurtful and as painful as they were before. You're able to reinvest in new relationships and life in a normal way with a good memory for that person, with a healthy emotional feeling for that person that you've lost. But I don't think anything in this world that's chaotic fits comfortably into little categories or stages. They're ways in which we try to perhaps see, well, where am I at the moment, and get some sense of this is the shared experience. I'm not alone. There are others going through this just like me. And sometimes group works and grieving and joining groups and meeting other people who've been through loss and talking to them can be quite helpful because you start to feel less alone in your grieving. It's a very isolated, lonely experience being caught in the midst of a loss. Even if you've got people around you who are loving and caring and family and supportive people, it's still very much your own unique experience. So you can feel a sense of isolation, emotional isolation within yourself. Sometimes I feel like even what I do with death and dying, looking after people on a daily basis who are going through different illnesses that are life limiting and life threatening, it's really chaotic, you know, the mental and emotional side of it all. And we try to categorize it too much sometimes. You're meant to be in a mess, and it's just a big mess for a while, and it's hard to get out of it. But it will. But there is a future because other people have been passed through these situations through the same mess, and they're still human. They're still getting along. They're still living their lives, and they're not sad all the time. There is a place of healing within all of us that we can access. And I think for me, what's made sense of my personal losses in this life, in this lifetime, has one part has been able to be a palliative care doctor. I've been able to look after people going through loss and grief and separation in their lives. And I've been able to do something practical with my role as a doctor that's enabled me to support people emotionally going through the same sort of distressing situations that I've been through personally. And I think being able to support others
Hi, Roger. Hi. Seems like broadband issue, maybe. Could you just repeat the last few sentences?
That's a challenge, but I'll give it my best go. Can you hear me now okay?
Yeah, you're absolutely fine now.
Okay, so was it just for a few moments that this happened?
Literally, just a couple of moments.
Okay, okay. I was just saying that as you go through life, and we start experience of our lives and try to use those to get meaningful way. The most meaningful way of using bad experiences in our lives is to start to learn how to support others from that. And I think for me, one of the is working as a doctor in palliative care has enabled me to perhaps take my worst experiences of grief in my earlier life and to do something with that in terms of providing practical, empathic and compassionate care of people going through terminal illnesses has been a great boon for me. I think it's been very helpful for them that I've been involved with them, but it means I'm sensitive and loving from my heart, as well as knowledgeable of the medical side of things, of medical aspects of what I can do to help others. So as you start to heal and come through a severe loss, you might be drawn towards supporting others or just moving on with your life. It's fine either way. You don't have to do anything with it. But it means you do have within you a vulnerability that has value. So sometimes vulnerability is something to avoid, but vulnerability that we value actually leads us back towards love, and we can get lovingly involved with supportive circumstances in their lives through being able to hold up through some experience that we've settled or we've passed through and that has settled within us. You always carry a loss with you, and you can suppress and repress grief. And you can unconsciously carry your own grief through your life. It's like a little bag called unfinished business. And when someone pushes the buttons, you're vulnerable to the buttons being pushed. When something pushes your buttons, you can One of the great teachings of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was that she talked about two things mainly that I learned from her. One was about unfinished business, carry anger and grief around with us from the events of our early life, and that anger and grief that we carry will actually come away because we become comfortable and reactive, where I need to be extending the ability to listen to someone, let them talk, let them go through their feelings. Whatever they're going through is normal. Don't try to provide solutions, but just let them talk without trying to fix things, without giving solutions, because the talking is actually protesting feelings. Are you there, Artie?
Hi, yeah. Sorry, I'd lost you for a moment there.
Yeah, okay. So my speaker's working again?
Yes, you are. Yes.
Okay. Sorry, every now and again I move my head and this light behind me blinds everybody, but don't be blind by the light. So maybe what I would like to do is perhaps just take you through a short meditation, then open this to questions and answers for the minutes. Would that be okay?
That would be lovely. Yes.
Okay, so if we have a meditation it's a grief and loss kind of seminar, but if we have a meditation, I'll take you through some of the sentiments that I've expressed. I don't mean dark emotions, but we'll go through the layers and see if we can find abundant and see if we can actually activate some healing process through this. You don't have to have been through grief and loss to. So just sit for a moment. Let me just have a sip of some water. So just sit for a moment comfortably in your chair or wherever you are. Make yourself as symmetrical as you can be. You can have your legs crossed or uncrossed, your hands on your lap. Just let your body relax completely and deeply and allow yourself to be free in this moment, letting go of anything that's happened before in the past and letting go of anything you have to do or anywhere you have to be after this talk. Just let go of everything outside of this moment so you're sitting quietly with yourself and turn your thoughts inwards. Just breathing inwards and outwards, becoming more and more relaxed, more completely. Just letting go and accepting this moment of peace right now. Within. And as I go within, I feel myself walking towards a tiny point of light. And I feel this point of light. In calmness and peace, drawing me towards itself, towards its center of peace. I move towards this light of peace and calm deep within myself. And in the outside, as I am surrounded by this protective light, I notice myself passing beyond the shadows, through the shadows. And in the shadows outside, I notice all the events of my life just passing by. And I feel myself able to simply watch and observe these events from this place of light, of peace and calm. I feel myself drawn deeply within, beyond the shadows, towards the center of this light. I found myself entering this point of light, this pure source of peace, of total calm, of deep, deep love, of pure truth and understanding, a place in which I feel myself expanding, expanding far beyond. I feel myself totally calm, totally peaceful, totally healed. A place of pure love, radiant and accepting of everything that happened, that we all have a journey. Each one is unique. Each one is individual, and we share our lives together, yet each one has its own destiny. And that destiny was to share love and life together. And at some point in life to separate and to go along our own path, and perhaps return together. And I acknowledge the shadows, that life has its ups and downs. I find myself in this pure understanding of self-acceptance, of peace, And I feel myself healing from within my heart and soul. I feel myself as healed and whole and complete once again, and able to live. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Roger. There's a few questions that have come in. Yes. So if I read them to you. So the first question is, my life has not been the same since my bereavement last year. I feel hollow and empty. Life feels meaningless, and I'm taking no pleasure from the things that used to bring joy. I started volunteering in a palliative care unit to help me through this bleakness and focus my thoughts on those who were at the end of life. But then lockdown happened and it stopped. Have you any advice? I'm devoid of family support, have no children, and my husband died in 2013. Do you know of any on-life grief groups I can join which might help? Many thanks. Some of us feel as though we have never been properly loved. Some people have had violent partners or abusive parents.
Yeah, it's a terribly lonely journey actually at times, and sometimes it's very hard to find good advice that you can give. I don't know of the online resources for grief, but I'm sure they can be found through the. I'm sure they can be discovered actually. What advice can I give? I'm a little bit lost here I'm so sorry that you're going through such an awful time, and also being distracted from. I think you'd found a way forwards actually when you looked into the. You can't bring. It's almost like there is a meaninglessness about this whole story, and we try to find meaning. It's very hard to find something meaningful in the process, but to actually use that loss, that terrible loss, in a practical way when you stepped into that palliative care volunteer work, and I can only encourage that as a possible way forwards, because if you do start to connect either there's something we haven't mentioned, that is the psychological support and counselling. There's a lot of grief counselling available. At least touching base and being able to see a counsellor will help educate you. Still feel lost sometimes years after the event, and to be still going through emotions and feelings like you've tried. Normal to have that sometimes for extended periods of time. It might be worth finding the support of a counselor or psychologist to help work through that kind of loneliness. I realize it's very hard with lockdown to get out there and find anybody to do anything with recently, but and you have to use online things which takes away some of the sensitive human contact which we create in times like this. All I can do really is acknowledge that this is a very lonely and challenging time that you're going through. And possibly that's all you can do is accept that this is how it is at the moment, and perhaps as you've suggested, look out into the online community and find a support group or someone who's gone through loss and separation, who can understand where you're coming from, that you can sort of perhaps speak to online or email or share your experience.
Just to say that a number of people have made suggestions in the chat section. So yes. If the person who's asking the question, if you wouldn't mind having a look at the chat section before we close the talk, you'll get a number
of suggestions. It's good to have other resources coming in. That's excellent.
Yeah, yeah. People are making suggestions. So that's really lovely and thankful for that. Here's the next question. Now, Roger, we keep losing you. I don't know if it's the broadband issue. I can't see anything from my side right now, or if it's just one of those things. I have no explanation for it. So
I haven't got anything either, because my connection's quite good and strong this side as well.
Yeah. So all right. Well, let me put the next question to you. My partner drowned 6 months ago. How long does acceptance generally take? I know it's probably different for everyone. I'm coping pretty well in circumstances and have good support, but some days I think, what's the point? So how long does acceptance generally take?
There's no answer. There's actually no time frame at all. It's very unique. I'm glad it's going along quite reasonably okay, actually. But and to be going along quite reasonably okay, six months along from losing a partner from a drowning incident is a pretty remarkable, in itself. So I'd say I have to actually going along okay, but the sort of reality of that experience and being able to get through the framework of the circumstances and what happened and the whole story that keeps on going over of how it might have been different and why it happened and what could have stopped it from happening, all of those things will keep repeating themselves over and over. And they're the obstacles that come in the way. At the end, acceptance is a state where I find more peace within myself, where the quality of acceptance and that could take. I don't know, some people don't get that sort of level of acceptance in their whole lifetime. So if you can get it in relationship to a loss, that's a wonder in itself. And sometimes the gift of someone who's been with us, that's loved us in our lives, there's a gift sort of hidden within the way things happen that's meant to enable us to reach heights in our own lives, because we don't look for meaning in meaningless small things. We start to look for meaning in the valuable, deeper, useful things of life. And where do I sit in the scheme of a greater, more beautiful kind of expansive, loving, you know, all these sort of qualities. Sometimes a loss will actually enable people to move forwards in a more beautiful way eventually. So it's not just to look to accept that things have happened and find acceptance. It's more to look at. Why am I really here? And what is this life really about? And who are we really? And what are we meant to be doing here with each other? You know, I think these are the things that crisis creates. I believe, like, crisis does have two sides to it. One side of crisis, and the other side of crisis is opportunity. And sometimes without being too, I don't want to sort of make smaller the terrible losses anyone's been through, but sometimes there's an opportunity hidden in crisis. life where we can define ourselves as who we are. And sometimes who we are is something very powerful and beautiful that we've overlooked for so many years when we've been comfortable in our lives.
Thank you. How do you recommend working through or accessing the pain of the loss once you've pushed it aside and avoided it for a long period of time?
I think that's a very good question, because when we have a pain of a loss, we can push it aside and we can avoid it, and we can push it deep down inside, and it's, you know, and it will create obstacles in our lives, because it will put layers of up against situations where we won't allow ourselves to become vulnerable. So actually, when we don't allow ourselves to be vulnerable, what we don't do is allow ourselves left. And it's a weird kind of paradox. It will come up by itself from time to time. When you watch movies and films, If you ever willing to become, at a time when you become vulnerable, to go into something that's a loss in life, you can actually annex it to a vulnerable moment where you go more deeply into the feeling and you start to invoke mental that loss and work through it. It happened to me in a workshop actually with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross back 30 years ago. When I was taken back into the experience of the loss of my sister, who died a cot death at the age of 10 months, was 10 years old. And I can remember when I was taken in this workshop experience, I was taken into the loss of this trouble and as overwhelming as if it had happened yesterday. So these things do sit under the surface, and in life, situations where it will create opportunities to engage loss and grief, or you can go and do self-awareness programs of different types. Self-development programs will often engage this things like just trying to remember the name. But if you undertake a lot of self-awareness around counseling and development, self-development, you'll often be taken into situations where you will experience loss from earlier in your life by facilitating processes. And you can engage little parts of you that are full of vulnerability and release from life that will give you a freedom then, where you'll feel liberated and free from that experience of loss that's happened before. Look around and see what comes your way. Send out the wish to be free of something that's in your past, and see what you manifest. These are, you know, that's a bit vague, but it actually works.
All right, thank you. Next question. How can we build healthy emotions?
Actually, I saw something this recently there where somebody said that it's normal and natural experience to go through loss and grief. It's absolutely normal, and I believe this is normal to go through grief. But I don't actually think it's natural, because I think the natural state is healthy, positive, pure emotions, that my original nature before I was touched by anything in this world, before I was hurt by any experience in this life, my natural state was of positive, pure emotions. My experience of is that my innate nature is naturally healthy and healed, and the qualities underneath everything are positive and pure. And feeding the positive, pure emotions is really important to sustaining ourselves. So I think quite a lot of people here will meditate, but in your meditation, we need to understand that meditation is and to fill the mind with positive thoughts and feelings for the self. We need to create a mind that's full of positive thoughts and feelings for others. So we've got to kind of work towards a mind that's actually starting to feel positive about itself. And the only experience that we can go to that significantly contains all my positive thoughts is the experience of peace. If I actually spend time detaching myself from all the sources of negative thoughts, feelings and emotions around me, and I start to orientate my mind towards peace, then in the center of peace, I'm in the midst of pure positive thoughts, feelings and emotions, gentleness, warmth, love, purity, power, understanding, caring, empathy, compassion. These feelings will actually start to emerge from the peaceful center. So regular meditation and feeding the mind, the thoughts and positive feelings is really the key to that. You know, I keep on hearing this story of these two wolves that are internal. I've heard them in different contexts. One of the contexts was a North American Indian wise Indian was talking to him, and he was telling them that there are two wolves internal inside that are fighting for their soul. One wolf is full of jealousy, is very forceful. The other wolf is very loving and peaceful and kind and calm. Which one wins? The wise elder replied, "The one that you feed the most." So if you're feeding your mind with negative emotions, it'll actually respond to that, and you'll become very negative about yourself and the world around you. If you feed your mind positive emotions, you'll start to detach from the negativity of the world around you and start to create a positive energy for that world. I've sometimes thought of it, it's a bit like internally we can create heaven or hell for ourselves, depending on what we think and feel. It's a bit like, you know, when you look after yourself in the morning, you get up in the morning and you feed your body good nutrition. But what do you feed your mind? Do you feed your mind good nutrition, or do you feed it with junk food? Do you do cereal for the body and McDonald's for the mind? It's the quality of what you're thinking. Pay attention to your thoughts and start to meditate on positive thoughts and feelings and emotions, and you'll generate a different self. And you'll generate a different perspective or perception of the world around you, in which you'll be safe.
Thank you. The next question. I know it's gone 12 o'clock. Are you okay for another 10 minutes or so?
Yes, totally.
Excellent. Thank you. So the next question is, as a therapist helping spousal bereaved clients, does it help explaining to clients the stages of the process they are at, or is it better to validate and normalize without explaining the theory?
I think validating and normalizing comes up first for me, and that's if we did a study in our palliative care unit when I first started there back 30 years ago, where we actually didn't do really a study, but we did a survey of what people needed from us in terms of their grief and loss and the interventions that they needed, and what came out of that most most significantly was education. I want to information, knowledge. I want to understand the process I'm in. So I think both of the things, validating the normality, is so important, because people just feel like they're going crazy sometimes, they're going totally mad. And to be validated and to know that what I'm going through is normal is such a relief. But also to be educated about the grieving process is really, really helpful for people, because we don't know where we're at. We're just lost at sea when we first go through a loss, and it's like being shipwrecked, really, emotionally shipwrecked. So it's a big mess. If you can validate, you start to help people put themselves together. And then if you can explain and provide education, information about the grieving process, then you give them a source of personal empowerment to move forward with.
Thank you. Okay, I'm doing my best with the next question. What advice do you give someone who has a complex experience of dealing with grief, loss, and actual death, that ends up in a relationship set for failure, so that you do not go through the grief of losing that person from a loving place, but from a bitter place? It's not the same to grieve a loss because they've been a disappointment to you, than to grieve someone who has been very loving.
Actually, one of the areas of complex grief where it becomes like an unhealthy place or a difficult place is when there's relationships. Sometimes when relationships have been beautiful and lovely, the grieving process is harsh and hard, and working through the emotions of loss are very challenging. But when there's ambivalence without as much love in the relationships, and there's a combination of good and bad features in the relationship, you can get stuck on the rocks of the shipwreck and find it very hard to get off, because there isn't enough positive emotion to call on from the relationship to actually start to help aid your recovery. So sometimes people where they've gone through that sort of ambivalence and negativity within relationships, bitterness side of it, they actually have a harder time getting through the grieving process than when the relationship's been very healthy previously. So it's, I forget the beginning, what was the beginning of the question? What was it? What advice do you give, or what?
What advice do you give someone who has a complex experience of dealing with grief, loss, and actual death at the end of a relationship, that then leads you to a relationship that you've set up for failure?
Yeah, it's often that when you get caught up in complex grief and grief that doesn't actually settle over time, there's no time to put on this, or it's still too intense sometime down, then you're getting into areas of areas where it's not sort of normal grieving process anymore, and there's probably a need for more professional help at that stage.
Okay, thank you. Next question is very easy. What is the correct name of William ... You mentioned somebody.
Warden. W-O-R-D-E-N, I think it is. W-O-R-D-E-N. William Warden. His tasks of mourning are there's a little booklet that I found was incredibly good when I was learning about grief and loss. I'm just trying to see if I can find the name of the booklet. It was Grief Counseling and Grief Therapy, by William Warden. Lovely. It's a very small, the one thing I liked about the book was like it only had about 60 pages or something. It was very small and quick.
Thank you. Thank you. And the final question that's come through, do you think grief over the end of a long-term relationship is different from a bereavement?
Do I think the grief is from a long-term relationship is different from a bereavement? So I think bereavement is synonymous to some extent with grief, because it's a separation and loss experience. It's pretty hard to undo these phrases. It's all a big mess. So trying to make sense of a big mess in life, what we do is we try to categorize things or put them in little boxes, and none of this fits in boxes actually. So you can have as big a relationship as you can as a small one. It just depends, as a short one, it just depends. What is dependent on the amount of grief is how much attachment is there in that relationship. And you can have less, you can find the attachment becomes less sometimes as you go on, but the love connection is still profound and deep. You never lose, there's never any loss of love in separation and loss of relationship. The love is eternal, and it's a quality and ever connecting, and creates and keeps us connected to whoever we've lost at any time in our lives, is still connected through love. But the intensity of attachment that's formed as part of a loving relationship is the foundation of the separation that creates the grief response and the sense of loss that takes place.
Thank you. And there is one more question that's just come through. You mentioned that volunteers in a palliative care unit often deal with their own grief. I also came to an idea when going through my own loss and grief. However, I was also concerned that I am being unfinished business. What advice would you give? At what stage of grief is it meaningful to start volunteering?
I think that wherever you go, you'll take something from doing something or reaching out or supporting others or helping people. But always be awake to the idea of reflective practice, where you sit back and you reflect what happens with clients or people that you start to come into touch with as volunteers or whatever. As a volunteer to continue to heal your own process, your own inner processes. So if you have unfinished business, don't just come into connection with your support of others, but be reflective and start to let go of it as time goes on. And you'll find that being a volunteer is very helpful to you and healing to you. It's not actually always that you're going to be healing and helpful to others. You will be, and both things will happen. You'll be helpful and healing to others, but your own healing is innate, is intrinsic and innate to that. So get involved. Don't be afraid to get involved and be reflective, because once you get involved, you're starting to have the courage to be vulnerable. When you have the courage to be vulnerable, you're starting to look inwards and facing your own demons. And when you start to face your own demons inwardly with that vulnerability, you start to become more mature and more experienced at managing the inner demons. And that enables you to, as time goes on, become more wise.
Thank you very, very much, Roger, for making the time and joining us and sharing your insights and experience. I'm also going to thank everybody who's still with us at the moment, and I'm sure you're walking away with as much as I am, and the whole understanding of the process, but also the patience and care and love that's needed to carry me through that particular part of my journey. Roger, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.